last week we were running through the things about light and glory and shining and how all that was their prophecies pointing to ultimately to the whole transformation that God had planned for us. And so to finish that section up, let's go to Matthew chapter 4. Matthew chapter 4. And we actually want to pick up, let's actually start from verse 12. Matthew 4, 12. Get what he's talking about here. It says, when he heard that John had been taken into custody, he withdrew into Galilee. And leaving Nazareth, he came and settled in Capernaum, which is by the sea in the region of Zebulun and Naphtali. This was to fulfill what was spoken through Isaiah the prophet, saying, the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, by the way of the sea, beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles, the people who were sitting in darkness saw a great light, and to those who were sitting in the land and shadow of death, upon them a light dawned. Okay, now, here you have a quotation from Isaiah chapter 9, verses 1 and 2. And notice in that, since we're talking about the glory and the light and the shining and all that kind of stuff, in verse 16, it talks about the people who were sitting in darkness saw a great light. Those who were sitting in the land and shadow of death, upon them a light dawned. And we did enough work last week just kind of showing that that's when anytime when it's talking about the light, the shining, that's going Jesus all the way, not just, you know, here on earth, but all the way to the throne, dwelling in glory. And then the shining, when it's for a shining upon them, for them to see, specifically then referring to Jesus on the throne and the beholding his glory in this mirror. Now, in this particular passage, though, he's got something else in mind. Sort of. Let's get the original. Go back to Isaiah chapter 9. Isaiah chapter 9. We're going to get verses 1 and 2. But there will be no more gloom for her who is in anguish. In earlier times, he treated the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali with contempt. But later on, he shall make it glorious. By the way of the sea, on the other side of the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. People who walk in darkness will see a great light. Those who live in a dark land, the light will shine on them. Okay, now, he talks about how, he says, he treated the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali with contempt, he said, in earlier times. Zebulun and Naphtali, if you have maps at the back and you want to look at that, that would be great. But if you get Zebulun and Naphtali, they're up in the northern part of Israel when the tribes each got their inheritance and it was all divided up. Zebulun and Naphtali are up close to the Sea of Galilee. Let me go see my handy little map here. Yeah, Naphtali is the one that wraps around, kind of wraps around the Sea of Galilee. Zebulun's right over there. And if you remember your history of Israel, those particular places, the northern tribes, once they broke into two, the northern tribes quickly went into idolatry. That was at the time of, hold on a second, Solomon's son. My mind's going blank. Hold on. David, Solomon, Solomon's son. Lost it. Somebody throw it out there for me. Thank you. Rehoboam, man. Jeroboam then in the north. That was the Boams got stuck on me. So Rehoboam in the south, and then at that time divided Jeroboam in the north. And Jeroboam immediately within just, well, I'll say it, within a short time, as he saw the people starting to head down to Jerusalem to worship, went, ah, this ain't going to work. I can't keep my kingdom if they're all going still down to Jerusalem. So he sets up some Baals or some golden calves in a couple different places. And then from then on out, that was the beginning of the end. I mean, they just went downward more and more into idolatry. So it talks about that the land of Zebulun and Naphtali were treated with contempt. When it's talked about darkness, the people who walk in darkness, those who live in a dark land, that's in reference to just all the idol worship that had gone on there. Now, it says that they would, it says in later on, okay, from Isaiah's time, 700 BC, later on, he says he'll make it glorious. Notice the glory there, the glorious. By the way, let's see, on the other side of Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles. Okay, already being called Galilee. So Zebulun and Naphtali, later on, by the time you get to Jesus' time, was referred to as Galilee. Hence, the apostles were all Galileans except for Judas. So Galilee of the Gentiles. And in verse 2, it says, the people who walk in darkness will see a great light. Those who live in a dark land, the light will shine on them. Now, again, you've got they're going to see, those people in particular would see a great light. Those people in particular, says the light will shine on them. Matthew actually tells exactly what he's talking about. Go back over to Matthew, please. Got to be polite. Please go back to Matthew. By the way, if I don't see your hand today, just kind of wave it around. With my glasses on, I don't see quite as well as contacts. So, you know, if I don't see it, just wave it. I'll see motion and all. And I might stick the microphone in somebody else's face, but, you know, no, it's not quite that bad. Matthew chapter 4. Notice this, he says, in 12, it says, he heard that John had been taken into custody. He withdrew into Galilee. Prior to that, he'd been down around Jerusalem in that area, but he says he withdrew into Galilee, leaving Nazareth. He came and settled in Capernaum, which is by the sea in the region of Zebulun and Naphtali. So he settled in Capernaum, there close to Zebulun, in the region of Zebulun and Naphtali. But he goes on and says, this was to fulfill what was spoken through Isaiah the prophet. So from that point on, Jesus makes Capernaum pretty much the central location of his ministry. As he's getting ready to gear up his ministry, once he gets immersed, once he goes through all of his temptations, grabs a few disciples, he packs everybody up, mother, brothers, everybody, moves them to Capernaum. And then Capernaum is where he's then going out from. And so you read through the Gospels and you'll find out that quite often he's back in Capernaum. It was just kind of a home base for him. And so it was a home base for him. I do that too sometimes. So when he talks about it, he says, this was to fulfill. Jesus moving to Capernaum, settling there by the sea, and working from there out, was to fulfill what was spoken through Isaiah. So the prophecy in Isaiah, Matthew tells us, is specifically about Jesus' ministry, about his preaching and teaching there. Okay, now, the question that we got to kind of fit in with all this and is, what does that have to do with light? Because all the other things that we're looking at was looking toward the end of the whole deal. What's he mean? Well, let's go to John chapter 1 real quick. John chapter 1. And we're going to start from the beginning. That is John 1:1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being by Him, and apart from Him, nothing came into being that has come into being. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. Okay, so in talking about this Word, you can later on, you know, if you want to go through and look at verse 14, tie it in with verse 29, or 14 and 15, tie it in with verse 29. You can do that. But you can eventually get yourself to figure out that the Word that he's talking about there is Jesus. So in him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness. This is verse 5. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. There came a man sent from God whose name was John. He came for a witness that he might bear witness of the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light that came that he might bear witness of the light. There was the true light, which coming into the world enlightens every man. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, and the world did not know him. He came to his own, and those who were his own did not receive him. Now, what I want you to notice is that here from the very beginning, one of the ways that he's referring to Jesus is as the light. And the light shining in the darkness, those his, which would be, then he's talking specifically there about how he came to his own did not receive him. The darkness was, were not comprehending that the light was shining. The light was shining. Even Jesus, when he was in the flesh, was the light. Flip over real quick to chapter 8. John chapter 8. John chapter 8, verse 12. It says, again, therefore, Jesus spoke to them, saying, I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in the darkness, but shall have the light of life. And he says, I am the light of the world. So Jesus, even as he was in the flesh, he says, he was the light shining in the world. He was the light of the world. Go over to chapter 12. John chapter 12. In case you hadn't noticed, this is quite a bit of a theme in John. Chapter 1, chapter 8, chapter 12. John chapter 12, verse 35. Verse 35. John 12, 35. Jesus therefore said to them, for a little while longer, the light is among you. Walk while you have the light, that darkness may not overtake you. He who walks in the darkness does not know where he goes. While you have the light, believe in the light, in order that you may become sons of light. Okay, now, notice here he says, a little while longer. Okay, John chapter 12, if you're looking at this, you're down to the last week of Jesus' life. I mean, right after that, John 13 is where he's having that last supper. He's eating the Passover with his apostles, washing their feet, all that kind of stuff. So this is right before that. He says, a little while longer, the light is among you, referring to himself again. See, Jesus, when he was in the flesh, he was the light of God. He was the light shining in the darkness. So when in Matthew chapter 4, when it says the light shall shine in the dark, or that the land that was in darkness would see a great light, Jesus was the light. He said, I am the light of the world. So even when he was in the flesh, he was in his character, was revealing the nature of God. He was revealing the light of God. So he was the light shining in the dark place. Let's notice, though, there in verse 36, he says, while you have the light, believe in the light, in order that you may become sons of light. Okay, now let's flip back to Matthew chapter 5. He told his apostles, believe in the light so that you may become sons of light. Matthew 5. And we're going to get verse 14. Start from verse 14. You are, this is Jesus speaking to disciples. He says, you are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do men light a lamp and put it under the peck measure, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. And now notice in that, Jesus kind of says, now, you're the light of the world. Ephesians chapter 5. Okay, keep your hand here so I can make this point, and then we'll come back to Matthew 5. Ephesians 5. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 8. Ephesians 5, 8 says, "For you were formerly darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the light consists in all goodness and righteousness and truth." Okay, now, you put all that together. He says there in Ephesians 5, he says, you know, you were formerly darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Light in the Lord. Earlier on, he had said there in John 12, told his apostles to believe in the light so that they could become sons of light. Ephesians says you're children of light. And so the encouragement is walk as children of light. But notice the fruit of the light. That is what can be seen if you are walking in the light is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth. Goodness, righteousness, truth. Yes, I see. Thank you.
Okay.
You have the advantage of being on the front row. So I can...
To a certain extent, I think we can refer to light as being knowledge. Because of the knowledge of the truth, we're able to think and do differently. You follow what I'm saying there? When Jesus taught, people are enlightened.
Okay, I will agree with that. I would say then for those back there, what Mel was saying was that the light would also be the knowledge, like the knowledge of the truth, the knowledge of what's right. And so he was talking about how Jesus was enlightening those who were around him. He was giving them the knowledge of the truth. Is that pretty close to where you're? And I would say, yes, that is part of it. But notice when it talks about walk, that's not the end of it. You're right. When he says walk as children of light, then he goes on and says, and the fruit of that then would be righteousness, goodness, righteousness, truth. What you're going to see is then it's going to be translated into the life. Now, think about this. When you are immersed into Christ, your sins are forgiven. I get you, Fred. You weren't waving. No, I saw you. When you are immersed into Christ, your sins are forgiven. They're washed away. The Spirit of God comes to live in you. The Holy Spirit comes to live in you. The Spirit of God, who is light. 1 Peter, 2 Peter. Hold on just a second. It's 1 or 2 Peter, so if you want, you can head in that direction, and then as we get there. Okay, I think I'm going to be opting for 1st. Let's see. First Peter chapter 4. First Peter 4:14. Says, if you are reviled for the name of Christ, you are blessed because the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. Okay, the Spirit of glory, the Spirit of light. Somewhere in my head, it's running around that I could probably find someplace that talks about being the Spirit of light. But the point is, you're immersed into Christ, you have the Holy Spirit. God, you have the Spirit of God, the Spirit of glory, you have the Spirit of light in you. So if you had a spiritual knife and cut open a person. Formerly you were darkness. Now you are light in the Lord. Cut you open. It's light. Because of the Spirit who's in you. Now, that's going to come through the knowledge. There's got to be some knowledge of what's going on. Like Mel was saying. So the enlightening part, it begins with knowledge. But the Spirit dwelling in you then will be translated, as we were talking about last week, into practice. It will be translated into what you do. Okay, so let me get Fred here, and I think Bob's got something too.
Well, this is something that's kind of really been fascinating to me, because I've been studying the concept of light and what goes on with it now since Oregon Peaks 2 years ago. And were you at that one?
No, I was at the one last year.
Oh.
And he's still on it. So.
Yeah. Okay. I'm specifically referring here to Bill Compton and his concept of light and stuff. And, you know, this is, I think, really exciting, because verse 16, I think, really defines what our role in the light is. Because a lot of times we, you know, like you were saying, we if you cut us open, you would see light. Okay, but the catch is, and I think it's defined here in verse 16 of Matthew, it says, let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works. And really, right there's the crux of the situation, is the fact that our good works, while they, if you go to James, he talks about our works, okay, and that they don't save us, but yet that we will have them. Okay, and that those good works are the light that shines forth from us. And you know, since we did that thing with Bill there, and he was talking about light and breaking the light down and using the rainbow as the example, and again, that's a huge concept just to grasp all by itself. But I've personally been kind of going through and trying to define what light is, because light is the characteristic of Christ. We're to have the characteristic of Christ. So I've been trying to kind of define that. Now, the first thing that I discovered is, man, it's huge. It's monstrous. I've basically found 37 concepts that I've found, and I don't think I found all of them by any means, of what that really is. But those are the specific things that we have to do. Okay, not just know, because a lot of times people think that Christianity is strictly the knowledge, and it's not. Okay, it's the doing of it. And when you start looking at the specific characteristics as defined in the Bible, and you've picked out three of them there in Ephesians, and I think that's what you were getting at, I hope. Okay, but as we look at those specific individual things, we see that those are the things that we have to do to shine forth that light. And what we have to be to shine forth that light. Because that's what people will see, is what we do. You know, you can talk the talk all you want, but until you walk in the walk, you don't get anywhere.
Right. Since Fred mentioned it, we'll go ahead and go there. I haven't forgotten you, Bob. Since Fred mentioned it, flip over to Matthew chapter 5, because that is, he took it exactly where I wanted to go. I don't know if that's a sign of a good teacher or a good student, maybe both. But that was exactly why I said we'd come back to it. So let's go ahead and get back to it. And that is there in Matthew 5. Talks about you are the light in verse 16. And let your light shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who's in heaven. Now, the couple things on that. First thing is, what they're going to see, if you're letting your light shine, they're going to see your good works. They're going to see what you're doing. Now, which is the same thing that Ephesians is talking about when it says that the fruit of the light, that is what can be seen, is the goodness, righteousness, truth. Those are all things that are going to go with that. So the light, you know, just the beginning of it is the knowledge, but it's the knowledge translated into practice. And kind of like what we were working on last week, though, that is the whole transformation process. Beholding the glory of the Lord, beholding that light in the mirror, and then being transformed. The Spirit who dwells in you is the one who then transforms you so that the good deeds will follow. Now, you can't get hung up on thinking, hey, I got to get all these good deeds without going through the transformation process. Otherwise, it's pharisaical. It's just outwardly, you're getting the outward stuff, but the real transformation isn't happening. It must take place by beholding the glory of the Lord in this mirror. Transforms you. It renews your mind. And then, you're renewing your mind through that. Then the Spirit of God is able to transform you so that then the light that will be seen by others is your good deeds. It is your character, which is what we're getting to with Jesus when we talk about the people who are sitting in darkness saw a great light. What were they seeing? They were seeing the character of Jesus. They were seeing the light as what the light that they were seeing in Jesus is the same light that they can see in us. It's, you know, there, that wasn't, you know, it says a great, they saw a great light and light it dawned on them. You know, that wasn't Jesus in his glory shining upon them. That's not the light that they were seeing. What they were seeing was the character and the transformation that the, or not in that case, for our case, it'd be the transformation that the glory of God can make in us. In his case, it was just the character that comes from the glory of God being in him. Let me get Bob back here. Do you still remember what you're going to say?
Sometimes.
This one you do, though.
Occasionally I do have a memory. I was thinking, when you were talking about going to 1 Peter, I was thinking you were going to go to 1 John 2, starting in verse 8. On the other hand, I am writing a new commandment to you, which is true in him and in you, because the darkness is passing away and the true light is already shining. And then he goes on to, if you say you have light and hate your brother, you have no light. So I was thinking that when you were talking about where you're going with the light, I was thinking you were going that.
Well, actually, 1 John, there's so much there about lights that you could spend a whole lot of time there on it. So, but yeah, that fits right in there, Bob. Totally fits in there within him and in us. So, good. Let's see. That's. Do anybody have any other comments on this part of it? Fred, you got one more there?
Well, I was just going to say the one thing that we want to remember is that when we're talking about this concept of light, we're talking about glory also, because they're one and the same. And so when people, you know, when we're out there in the world, okay, when we're talking about people being able to see the light of Christ, that's the glory of Christ. And that's, I guess, kind of the flip side of it is where the knowledge comes in. Because we have to know what the glory of Christ is, and we can only know it through Jesus Christ. And so we have to make sure that we understand that. Because a lot of times, you know, I've talked to people and, you know, they're all excited about glory and stuff, and they don't have a clue what it is. And so it's, you know, it's important that we understand that when we're talking about light, when we're talking about glory, we're talking about what it takes to really be a Christian. And not only to be a Christian, but be such that when people of the world see you, they know that you're a Christian.
Right. Right. And that is, that's kind of what we were working on last week when we just kind of went through, we did establish all the glory and the light and all that. But also, you know, what it really comes down to, when you're looking at the passage, let's flip back to Matthew 4. You know, there is for the Christian, where we talk about, you know, Christ in us, the hope of glory. There is a glory that we are still hoping for. There is the glory, you know, that we're desiring when Jesus returns, that we will share with him eternally. Okay? There is that glory. But then there's also what is for here and for now, which is by faith. And that is what you see. And the point that I want to make with this passage in Matthew 4 then, where it says the people who were sitting in darkness saw a great light. and to those who were sitting in the land and shadow of death, upon them a light dawned. And speaking about Jesus being there, being among them, that should be the same thing that people could say about us. One of the interesting things about light is the light shines brightest in the darkness. The darker that things are, the brighter the light, even the small light stands out. As our culture heads more and more down the path of darkness, and unless you've been sleeping, unless you're doing the little Rip Van Winkle on us here, you will notice that our culture here in America has been rapidly on the decline and rapidly heading into darkness. Okay, now that being the case, you got a couple ways that you can deal with it. One is you can get really discouraged about the darkness that's going on and the forces of darkness and get really discouraged by that. Or the flip side of it is you can recognize that the light will shine brighter. As we continue to be transformed in the image of Christ, which would include then his character, as we are taking on the character of Christ in this transformation process, we are going to shine brighter and brighter in the world around us. We are going to be more and more different. We are going to look more and more different than everybody else. That's okay, because people who desire light will see it and will desire it. In Galilee, Jesus, do you ever wonder why did Jesus do his stuff in Galilee? Why not down in the city, why not down in Jerusalem? Which he did do some stuff down in Jerusalem, don't get me wrong. He did what he needed to do down there. But a lot of times, Galilee was where he was focusing. Why? Seems like you had some people there who, sometimes I picture Galilee to be a little bit like Montana. The state of Montana. A little bit isolated, a little bit separate from everybody else. But a little bit greater love for freedom. That's the, at least from the things that I've seen in the history about that point in time, the zealots and those who were really trying to stir things up and get things going, they were in Galilee. They weren't hanging out in Judea. They were in Galilee. So even the spiritual revolution then that Jesus brought in came out of Galilee. So you can make your applications to the state of Montana. And I do mean that positively in case you're trying to figure that out. Rain, did you have something back here?
Yeah, I just wanted to share one other concept that we can associate with light is suffering as it relates to Christian glory. And that is kind of, I'll just read this particular passage out of Romans chapter 8. It says, "The Spirit himself bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God. And if children, heirs, also heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with him in order that we may also be glorified with him. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us. For the anxious longing of the creation awaits eagerly for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not of its own will, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will also be set free from its slavery to corruption into the freedom of the glory of the children of God."
Right. So Jesus, even though he had light, he was the light, he had the character, obviously had the character, even though he had all of that, there was still suffering before the glory at the end. Same thing. Same thing for us. Enjoy your suffering now. We exult in our tribulations, right?
I want to change gears for a minute. I want to go back to Isaiah, and I want to look at what you're talking about here when you're wondering why he goes to Galilee. And that because it's known as Galilee of the Gentiles. I think as far back as Isaiah, God was already pointing to the fact that he was not only the God of the Jews, but of the Gentiles, and was going to take and let the light shine in all of the earth, and was not going to restrict it to the Jews as they wanted it to be.
You're rapidly destroying your premillennialist picture there, Bob. perception. Yes, I think you're right. I think all the way back there, 700 years before, he is throwing out there Galilee of the Gentiles. Probably a little jab there, you know. But, yeah. Anybody got anything else on that?
I think that's kind of an interesting point because one of the comments that the Pharisees were made about the apostles, if you remember right, was, how can these guys have all this knowledge? They're just Galileans.
Right. Well, actually, I think they're referred to as uneducated. With Jesus personally, they said, what good thing ever came out of Galilee? So that might have been Nazareth. Anyway, but yeah, you're right. Galilee was kind of looked down on. It wasn't seen as the well-educated because it wasn't the center of learning. So, yep. Okay, so just to tie this up, and man, this was going to be my early let's get started, and then what I really wanted to get to is, all right. It's good, though. It's good. Now, what in tying this up, and then I'll just introduce us to what we're going to get into next week now, is that Jesus in the world, you know, even though all those prophecies about him, Simeon, you know, looks at him and says, I've seen the salvation of God and, you know, the light of revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of his people, Israel. And so he's talking and he's looking down the road. He's looking to the whole transformation process. We actually get, when it's quoted there in Matthew 4, we actually get the picture of what that transformation process does for us. When it talks about Jesus being a light, even at that time, through his character, he was a light to the people around. That's what it means for us too. You know, as you are transformed into the character of Christ, as you are transformed from glory to glory by the Spirit dwelling in you, as you renew your mind by beholding his glory in this mirror, as you do that, you're transformed to be like Christ. You are going to shine brighter and brighter. And it is going to be in your deeds, which your deeds are a result of your character. Good works come out of character. They come out of who you are. So that's the power of this, is that you who were formerly darkness. I mean, just go over to Ephesians chapter 2 for a second. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 1. It says, and you were dead in your trespasses and sins, in which you formerly walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, of the spirit that is now working in the sons of disobedience. Among them, we too all formerly lived in the lusts of our flesh, indulging the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, even as the rest. He says, you were formerly darkness. I mean, you can try all you want and try to think about how good you were. But if you're being honest, you got to admit you were darkness. I mean, he says, we too all formerly lived in the lusts of our flesh, indulging the desires of the flesh and of the mind. I mean, ultimately, you can look out and you can be as judgmental as you want to be on the particular sins that other people are involved in, but if you really are honest about looking back at the ones in your past, how much better were they? Now,
okay, I'll give everybody something to think about for next week, okay? Did Jesus move to Capernaum because the prediction in Isaiah say that he was going to go there? In other words, they say, okay, it says in Isaiah, we got to pack up and we got to move to Capernaum. So pack up your goods, people, you pack up your furniture, and away we go.
Okay, here's your homework assignment. Mel's given homework assignments now. He said, when Jesus moved to Capernaum, when he packed everybody up and moved to Capernaum, he said, was that because he recognized the passage there in Isaiah as saying that's where he needed to be? Or was it something different? Is that pretty much your...
Or basically backwards, the other way. He moved there, but he was predicted to be there.
So, okay, gotcha. So did he see it, look at it, and go, oh, yep, we need to be in Capernaum? Or did he look at it, and he moved to Capernaum and just happened to have fulfilled the prophecy in the process? Oh, hey, we got Jeff ready to go. He might already have it. He's already done his homework. Sorry.
No, I haven't done my homework yet. Oh, but okay. We do know that when Jesus was on the cross, he actively sought out getting the drink of sour wine to fulfill that prophecy. So he did it then.
Right. And then when he was headed into Jerusalem, when he was going to ride into Jerusalem. Oh, sorry, in case you didn't get Jeff's. What Jeff was saying was that when Jesus was hanging on the cross, he sought out the sour wine. He specifically asked for the sour wine to fulfill the prophecy. So there's definitely, and I was tying in that when he was riding into Jerusalem, he went through and made the arrangements to get what he needed to ride in as Zechariah had prophesied it. So there were definitely some of them that, yes, he was specifically setting out to fulfill, which does tie in very well with where we want to head next week, which is in the dealing with the temptations. When you have the record there in Matthew 4 and Luke 4 of Satan tempting Jesus, he's fasted the 40 days, been tempting him throughout it, and he gets there, those temptations. So if you want to read those sections ahead of time, be ready. You may do that. But I think what we will see is that actually is part of what I think Satan was tempting him with, was trying to get him to fulfill some prophecies that he wasn't meant to fulfill, at least in the way that Satan was trying to get into. So, but that's a good question. You know, Mel's question is good. Did Jesus specifically set out? And I don't know if we're going to be able to get an answer to your question for you there, Mel. but was he specifically setting out to fulfill that? Or did it just, he did it and it happened to have fulfilled the prophecy? And I think you can do that with just about all of these prophecies that we're going to get in his life. We're pretty clear on the birth ones. He didn't specifically set out to fulfill those. You know, I think, you know, God had to arrange some of those. Certain other ones he couldn't have controlled. But the ones that by the time he gets to be a man and he's fulfilling prophecies, you know, something worth thinking about is, Was it an intentional fulfillment, or was it a fulfillment that God had to arrange? So anyway, interesting thoughts. So tying this up, final here, and that is, remember, as we're looking at this stuff, as we're looking at all these things about light and glory, and you know that picture in Matthew is the picture of what we can be. That as we are transformed into the image of Christ, as he was the light shining in the darkness, so too are we. We are the light shining in the darkness. And the light had a great effect there in Galilee, as he shone through his character, through the compassion that he had. He had a great effect on what was going on there. How about us? You know, we can greatly impact those around us just by who we are, and by our good deeds that are a result of having the character of Christ in us.